Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at growing grapes and tending vines and a little about wine and winemaking here with our guest, Philippe Cocard, a winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery in Prairie du Sac. He's from the Beaujolais region of France originally, comes from a winemaking family and has done just an absolutely marvelous job with Wallersheim, his whole series of wines that he has at Wallersheim Winery. And great to have him along because he knows a lot about grapes. And boy, he had some, I'm sure, some management issues this year that we can talk with him about this spring, especially with his grape vines. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about growing grapes, the types of grapes you need for different wines. And certainly answer your questions. Do you grow grapes? What do you do with them? Have you visited the Wallersheim Vineyard and Winery? Hope you have. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Or again, you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo, a question, or a comment there as well. Philippe, good to have you back.
Hello. Thank you.
Talk about award-winning. You brought some. I have some wines here in front of me, and those have garnered some wonderful awards.
Yeah, it's been awesome spring, despite the frost. But within 1 week, you know, from the West Coast to the East Coast, we got awarded, I was going to say, hit with medals everywhere. Starting in San Diego International Wine Competition, we got 6 platinum awards. Which allowed us to be named the Winery of the Year.
Yeah.
First time that a winery was named outside of California.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And we broke the record for 6 platinum. When the last time it was done, it was 2 years ago with 4 platinum awards. And that included the Prairie Fumé, the Prairie Blush, the Dry Riesling, the White Riesling, Cedar Creek Waterfall Mist, Cedar Creek Riesling, and La Belle Vie, Cedar Creek Vidal. So
wonderful.
And then a week after that, East Coast, the same 6 wine got 6 first place out of the first 10. The Dry Riesling was named Grand Champion Riesling, best white of the competition, best wine of the competition. So it was... pretty awesome.
Oh, very, very, very awesome. And obviously, grapes, growing grapes and selecting grapes are obviously very important.
And, you know, especially this year with what we've seen with the frost, selecting the site, selecting the height of planting, selecting the kinds of grapes, the different time of budding out. It's an ongoing challenge, you know. I mean, it is no different than farming. When should I plant corn? When should I not? Kind of, it's a gamble, you know. Some years are great, and some years are not so good.
Yeah. So, did you lose a lot of grape?
We lost more than we wanted. We lost about 25% of the shoots. Some fields got hit more than other. One field in particular, we lost about 50% of the crop.
Oh, boy.
And other fields, 10, 30%, depending on, you know, there's a lot of variable. And we battled the frost about 12 nights, almost 12 nights in a row. The week of Easter, actually, it was 7 nights in a row. So
not a lot of sleep that week.
No, quite often I told my coworker I saw the moon rise, the moon set, the sunrise, and the sunset all in one day.
Oh boy! Well, I'm glad there's still plenty of grape out there.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. No worry.
David in Madison has a question for you. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, Larry. Philippe, you probably don't remember, but when you first moved here from Beaujolais, and, God, when was that? It was like the early 80s or something like that?
1984.
Okay, there you go. We had a tasting at a friend's house. It was Pinot Noir. It wasn't a very good tasting, but it was fun. This is the first time I met you. But the question I have is, can you describe the difference between the terroir of Beaujolais and the terroir of Wisconsin?
Terroir is a fascinating subject, and
some people are going to say, well, what does that mean?
Terroir it comes from terre, soil, earth, mm-hmm. and it is the taste, the segment of the taste that is given from the soil, the micro element. So sometimes we talk about chalky from the limestone. We talk mm-hmm. about flintstone. We talk about granite. We talk about earthy, smoky, and so on. The terroir of Beaujolais, to answer your specific question, must have 12 different terroirs, equaling 12 or 15 different regions. And that's what makes wine a very interesting tasting beverage. I have two uncles, same Gamay grape, same weather, same family, same winemaking technique. Two different locations, two different terroirs. One is grown on granite soil, deeper wine, more complex wine, more ageable wine. The other uncle is grown on flatter soil, flintstone, very different wine, more suited for a Beaujolais Nouveau, a lighter wine.
Mm-hmm.
Our Wisconsin terroir is sandy loams on limestone strata. I feel it is unique. We have our domain reserve made of 40-year-old vines. It's one of a kind. You cannot find that terroir anywhere else.
Beautiful.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments for Philippe Coquard. We're talking about growing grapes, tending vines, and also talking about wines and winemaking. Certainly look forward to your calls at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And I don't know if I mentioned, I can't remember if I mentioned, this is happy 40th birthday for Wallersheim Wines.
Mm-hmm. 1972-2012, that's when Julie's parents, Bob and Joan Wallersheim, my in-laws, bought the property and replanted the vineyard, restarted the wine business. We all know it had been a winery in 1860s, closed at the Prohibition in 1919. 1972, Bob and Joanne replanted, reopened to the public, made wine, and we are celebrating our 40th. And as part of the celebration, we will be planting grapes on Friday.
Yeah, it's a big event.
Yeah,
talk about that for a minute.
It's there is not a winery without grape growing. That's where it starts. We always say it starts in the vineyard. So as part of the celebration for our 40th anniversary, we are for the first time doing a public planting and inviting the public to come and partake in the 40th anniversary. And, you know, it's kind of celebrating the legacy of the past grape growers and looking into the future. Our oldest vine being 40 years old. Last spring, we took some cuttings out of the 40-year-old vine, had a friend of ours in New York State, Double A Vineyard, root those cuttings for us. We got the rooted vine back this spring, and we will be planting those vines that came from what I call mother vines of 40 years of age. And so the public is invited to come Friday morning to help us plant a couple hundred vines. And we will have a little toast with Domaine Dussac and so on.
Oh, that's any time between 8 and
12.
12 on Friday, so just a couple days from now.
Yeah.
And Judith and I are going to be in Bayfield having a great time at to bring in Bayfield in Bloom on Friday, so we won't be able to attend, which is a little bit of a disappointment, but I know it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Continuing the legacy, you know, that's what it's about.
That's what it's about. Ed in Lakewood. Turning to you next. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What is on your mind?
Well, my question is about wild grapes.
Okay.
I've made wine pretty successfully with wild grapes over the last several years, and it's a great business plan. I don't own the land. I don't plant the grapes. I don't tend the grapes. I just go out and pick the grapes along the roadside. And but I've had tremendous success. Have you ever tried wild grapes?
No, not personally. I have tried wild grape wine, which has been good, not on a commercial scale, but a lot of home winemakers make wild grape wine, and it's always good, interesting, never been disappointed. It does require quite a bit of sugar because it is not known to be naturally sweet.
Correct.
Acid is quite high sometimes, but it does make a good wine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does. Well, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. The skill of the winemaker is certainly important, but how important is the quality of the grapes and the vines that produce them?
You know, it does start with good grape. You cannot make good wine from bad grapes. There is no secret right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, healthy grapes, you don't want them to be sour. You don't want them to be rotting. You don't want them to be covered with downy mildew or powdery mildew. So there is, you know, growing grape is as much as being a good farmer, a lot of knowledge. The winemaking is scientific and artistic, but growing grape is highly scientific, you know.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of room for luck when it comes to growing grapes.
Caller from Calumet County planted about 6 vines 3 years ago. Seemed to be growing well, but her production, her problem is that the wasps get to the grapes before she can. Any suggestions for keeping the wasps away?
Actually, we do battle the wasp every late August, and we do use insecticide called Seven. It is available at your garden center. And there's a couple reasons why we have to deal with the yellow jackets or wasp. One is you could get stung. Two, they do a lot of damage, consume the fruit, poke the mm-hmm. berries, and what happened on a commercial scale, they poke the berries, the juice run down, bacteria will go on that, and it turns to vinegar. That could totally ruin a batch.
Yeah.
So, yellow jacket, we don't want them around.
Do you, on a small scale, now 6 vines is fairly, not a huge, large scale, you could you cover those not hardware cloth, but garden cloth during the time? Would it be possible?
You do want to put a net over it to protect against the birds.
Yeah.
Quite often the birds, and we get this question all the time, the birds will get to the grapes before you get to it. When it comes to the yellow jacket, they would find a way to get underneath. So,
Philippe Cocard, our guest today, winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery in Prairie du Sac, our guest. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Philippe Cocard, our guest today, as we talk growing grapes, tending vines, and talking wines and winemaking with him today. Thank you for listening in. Again, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. And Peter in Soldiers Grove, it's your turn next. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I grew up drinking mostly wines from the Mosel. Some of my favorites would be a Villeneuve Solaner and a Bernkasteler. Is there anybody in the U.S. that makes anything close to the grapes grown on the Mosel?
Actually, I'm glad you asked this question. What comes to mind is a Riesling, and that's a short answer to a long question, or good question. traditionally in America, Rieslings are known to be sweet. However, we make a dry Riesling. We make a Riesling that is very much a Mosel style, off-dry, not very sweet, light, a little bit on the fruitier side, and that's the Riesling that has been awarded so many medals.
It's won lots of awards.
Lots of awards. It is a little bit untraditional as a Riesling. It is not as sweet as most Rieslings. And just to give you an idea, this dry Riesling is what we call 0.5 residual sweetness with 11.5% of alcohol. A white Riesling or traditional Riesling is more like in the 2-2.5% with a little bit less alcohol. But that would be in that style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, the Mosel wines are sweet, but it's not. Of course, it's not a sweetness like some god-awful wine like Blue Nun or something like that.
No, you're right. And it's a matter of balance, you know, sweet, sour, nice, light and fruity and off-dry, and that's kind of what our dry Riesling will remind you of.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll try to fix them up then. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. And Gary, in Dalton, Alabama, it's your turn. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hello, you're quite welcome. Yeah, my wife and I are wine idiots. We understand that wine is a good addition for your health, but we don't know where to start. We don't know if we should be looking for a certain grape or a certain type of wine to get started. We know we probably don't want to start with something really dry, but we don't know where to start. We're wondering if your guest might help us.
All right.
Well, thank you. That's an awesome question. Try to think about wine and food going together. You know, we always teach or advocate wine and food together and not wine by itself. With appetizer, with cheese, with fruit, start with a light, semi-dry white, a Riesling, a Mosel. Don't go the Chardonnay route yet. It might be too dry, but a Pinot Grigio, that style of wine. And then with dinner, with pasta, pizza, other dishes, go with a drier wine like a Chardonnay or a light red. Don't jump right away into the heavy Merlot, Cab, Syrah, but stay on the lighter, not oaked wine. So a light Italian red, a Beaujolais, would work good. And then later on, as you get educated or your palate like those style of wine, you can move into the softer, bigger red wine, Merlot, Cab, Syrah, Pinots, and so on. The redder it is, the healthier it is. Dry reds are healthy, so eventually you would want to migrate that direction. But start on the light semi-dry and move towards the bigger reds.
Oh, excellent. So we should layer our wine like we layer our food.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't open one bottle and think you have to empty it. Open one bottle, have a couple glasses, put the cap back on and back in the fridge, and then you move on to the next wine. And so within one meal, you will have a chance to experience three different tastes, and that gives you a good idea of where your taste buds are and where you should educate your taste buds towards.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff in Trempolo, turning to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And what's on your mind?
Just wanted to comment. My wife and I were in Napa a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything on Wollersheim. Wollersheim's a heck of a winery.
Thanks.
That's good.
Yeah, and we visited quite a bit. We spent a couple days there, and we had a great time, brought some wine back. And we still like the local product.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. How long does it take for vines to fruit, to actually develop fruit?
That's a tough one because, you know, a lot of people want to get into grape growing and it looks interesting and fascinating and you can make some good money per acre and so on. However, it will take 5 years or 4 years for the first small crop. Fifth year, you have a large crop. So only on the fifth year, you're really looking at cashing in your investment. And it will cost anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 to put 1 acre of grapes.
Mm-hmm.
The vine, the trellis, the post, the work, the wire. So it is not a cheap endeavor.
And which grow best in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, it's interesting seeing what happened over 40 years. When Bob and Joanne started, we rely exclusively on what we call French-American hybrids. And Bob tried 30, 40 different kinds. And now we continue to use French-American hybrids known as Maréchal Foch. That's the easiest one to grow around here. And there's a new generation of American hybrids discovered by Elmer Swenson in northern Wisconsin, Osceola, Wisconsin. Elmer's program was taken over by University of Minnesota, and since then they have came up with outstanding grapes suited for the upper Midwest, known as La Crosse, St. Pepin, La Crescent, Frontenac, Frontenac Gris, Marquette, Frontenac Blanc. There is a lot of grapes that are now available, which we didn't have 40 years ago. And they are winter hardy. They are some are disease resistant more than other. The winemaking style is still a little bit of a challenge. It does require a good winemaking skill and some experience to achieve a premium result, but it doesn't come the first year.
We have Jack in Milwaukee next with a question. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how's everybody there?
Good.
Great.
My question is about vertical shoot positioning. We've been growing grapes on a high wire about 6 foot high, but we're having trouble getting them to grow in the right direction down, and so we've been deciding to try and redo our grapes in a vertical shoot positioning. What would you think about that?
What are you growing?
Well, we've got Frontenac on the high wire, and we've got some other Swenson hybrids on the high wire, but we're having trouble with keeping, you know, training them to grow down off the high wire. We get too many rogue shoots that grow over the top, and it shades the lower, and it causes uneven ripening.
Well, are you located in bottomland or highland?
Well, we're in Washington County. We're not really high, not really low. We've got a little slope to the land.
Okay.
And the basic slope goes south and east. You know, we get pretty decent air drainage, but, you know, the lower end of it gets, you know, frosty early
okay.
in the spring.
And I'm asking that question because there is about one and a half acre at the winery of Foch grapes on a low cordon with a VSP. We are going to retrain that one to high cordon on the flatland because we got hit with the frost really bad. So there is nothing wrong with high cordon and letting the shoots hang down. The problem that I see is the location of that top wire over the fruiting wire might be too close. And you're right, the shoots will hang over that. And don't be afraid to hedge trim, you know. Just think about the concept. It requires 5 leaves to ripen 1 cluster of grapes. If the shoots are over 3 foot long, 3 feet long, you're wasting energy. So you can hand clip those. And we do aggressive hedge trimming at the winery to avoid the shading and those shoots from hanging over. So, you know, you can go head first into the vine and do what we call shoot positioning, leaf removal, exposing the clusters, and don't be afraid to cut those top runners.
Okay, another question. Did you have problems? Are you growing La Crescent at the winery?
We did, and we don't anymore. On our location, it became a magnet for downy mildew. Every year, August 15th, it turned white, and we did not want to spread all the time, so we abandoned La Crescent.
Okay, because I'm growing it, and this spring I noticed that we've had a tremendous amount of die-off. It looks like some vines are completely gone. So we didn't notice an awful lot of mildew, but we had that really wet spring last year, and we thought that seemed to have affected all the vines and, you know, just the way they grew and ripened.
Yeah, and, you know, you might not see the mildew, and that's most likely what will have weakened those vines. La Crescent has some issue that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other white hybrids that you would recommend for our area?
Right now, the only I think Frontenac Blanc is a lot better than Frontenac Gris. From what I hear and what we have experienced, Frontenac Gris is falling on the sideline. Saint Pepin is still extremely reliable. You do need a cross pollinator as La Crosse. Actually, there are quite a few you should check. Is Prairie Star. Skipping a few. Brianna. Those are upcoming and quite interesting out of Nebraska, actually.
Oh, Brianna out of Nebraska.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Listener Patrick is wondering if you have any thoughts on Hungarian-style reds. I'm not sure what Hungarian-style is, but...
I do not... Are we talking sweet, dry, or we don't know?
We don't know. Hungarian-style reds.
The few Hungarian-style reds that I have tasted, big, earthy, big red, are fine. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, there would be a big Cab or Zinfandel-like, and... they are great wines. Now, the crafting of it in terms of the aging, the finesse, the class of the wine, that's up to... We cannot classify it as a generic style. That will be up to the winery. But, you know, reds from Italy, France, Greece, Spain, anywhere, California or Wisconsin are all great wines.
We had an email from Paul over the last, well, you've been here 28 years, I think, and over the last, he was saying 30 to 40 years, but let's say even the 28 years, have you noticed changes in weather trends that have influenced your horticulture and production? I understand that wine production can be particularly sensitive to this and wonder whether such weather changes are influencing present production or decisions regarding future production?
Oh, absolutely. I tell you what, this year we have learned a lot more than in the past. This year alone, I have learned more than I have in the last 28 years.
Wow.
And it's making me reconsider training height on the vine. Not so much the choice. We will always, I mean, we have a limited choice of grapes to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's not so much the choice, but site location is extremely critical, but more so this year, the height of the vine. Everything that we had trained at 42 inches off the ground got hit a lot more than 5 foot tall.
Oh.
So, and, you know, different protection method, frost protection. Will we have to consider drip irrigation down the road? The weather pattern is definitely changing. I'm afraid that this year could become a common reoccurrence than an exception.
Yeah.
So we are anticipating some adjustment.
1-800-642-1234, your number to call in with your question. And Tonya in Washburn, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
When I was younger, I had, well, in the 70s, my father used to make wine, and I don't know that much about how you would name a wine, like if between a Merlot or, you know, that type of a thing, different reds. It was a dry red wine. He used to get his grapes from California, from Zinfandel, and I remember they were very, very small, almost black grapes. And I never knew what kind it was. All I knew it was a dry red wine, and it was very good and pretty potent, as I remember. Mm. How would you name some? He just called it Croatian cream because he was Croatian, and his parents were from Croatia, where there's a lot of grapes, and they were winemakers over there, their families. So.
Sure.
Actually, Zinfandel is a grape. And
okay.
It is likely to be that one. And Zinfandel in California is one of their premium. I don't think any other places in the world can make a better Zinfandel than California does because of the heat, the weather. And it does make a big, dry, ageable red wine. That is outstanding.
Yeah, I remember everybody loved it. It was very good. but his name was funny. And he even made labels for the bottles.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Oh, so
well,
good
you.
Memories.
Thank you.
Great memories. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call and that story. It's really a good one. Well, I'm wondering about the pollinators for grapes. What are the pollinators?
Actually, interestingly enough, Larry, they are self-pollinated.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they are self-pollinated. And there's only one that I know of is that sandpiper grapes that we mm-hmm. use for... there might be one other, and I don't know the name of it, but sandpiper does require cross-pollination from other vines. But the little flowers are pollinated underneath a cap. And as the cap is falling, it's already pollinated. What could affect pollination is a cold snap, a cold rain, where the little cap would not fall off and the flower aborts. There's not enough pollen or it gets wet. So a cold, wet rain on the bloom is never a good thing.
Aunt Elise in Wausau. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a question. When I was a child, my mother raised grapes and made jelly and wine. She raised, there was a Concord, this is in southern Indiana, there was a Concord, and there was also a hard green grape that when it ripened, it was translucent white, and it was very, very sweet. I've been trying to find out what kind of grape that may have been.
Wow.
And you're sure it was a grape?
Yes, we had an arbor. It was a grape arbor.
Oh. Wow.
Oh, my.
I do not know.
Wow. And if Philippe doesn't know.
No, I do not know.
That's why I called. I have been trying so hard to find.
Do you remember where the leaves, the underneath of the leaves, were they a fuzzy white?
Oh, dear, I don't remember. No. I just remember there were two grapes on the arbor. We used to stand on our tricycles to reach them.
Oh.
Wow. No, it was very sweet. When it was not ripe, when it was starting out, it was a very hard green grape. And then when it was fully ripe, it was very sweet and translucent white.
Wow. There's so many...
I know.
So many different possibility and choices that... I would not know where to begin.
I just took a chance.
Okay. Thank you for the test.
Yeah, that was a hard one. Translucent. That's one that I wouldn't even try to hazard a guess. Are the grapevines prone to a fair amount of pests? I mean, we've talked about different insects. Birds are a problem.
You know, in general, not so sensitive to all that. You know, there's more issue with oversight of a fungus, you know, downy or powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the minimal, you know, there's so many things that can be done without relying on quote-unquote chemical or spray.
Right.
Keeping the vineyard floor mowed regularly and so it dries. Mm-hmm. Doing the hedge trimming, like we talked about, so no shoots touching the grass. Cut all the shoots off a foot or two off the ground. Do sunlight penetration inside the vine so the foliage dries out so there's less water, less fungus. One of the insects we are all battling on our roses and spices is the Japanese beetle. And yeah, that is becoming a serious issue Midwest-wide. I think the professionals are quite worried that it is getting worse before it gets better, and we do have to rely on insecticide for those.
Yeah. Phil Pelletieri says that the history has been that they'll get to be just a terrible level in some areas, and then they get back to a manageable mm-hmm. size. So that's what we're kind of hoping that something mm-hmm. along the line affects them. Mm-hmm. And Amber in southeast Minnesota, hi.
Hello there. I had a question about growing conditions for the grapes. 1 year to the next, whether you get a warm year or a wet year or what have you, how does that affect the flavor of the wine?
Oh, it's that's the beauty of winemaking. Great vintages versus not so good. Just a premium example, 2010 for us, 2011. 2010, if you recall, a very cool summer. I don't even know if we got one day over 90. You know, cool summer, cloudy, rain does not mean a great vintage. It all has to do with the sunlight. Not so much the rain in the spring. But, you know, the last month of the year, the month of August, will really dictate the quality. If you have 10 inches of rain or 6 inches of rain on a beautiful, ripe a crop, you could lose the vintage because it's diluted, the berries split, it turns sour, you have to pick in a hurry, and so on. So, in a dream world would be 85 blue sky, light wind, nice and dry. Dry is good, sunny is good, and that's the difference between a great vintage and a not-so-good vintage.
Mm. And there you have it. Thank you so much, Amber, for calling. And, Philippe, we are out of time. Thank you so much. Boy, I wanted to mention your website. If people just go to Wallersheim Winery online, you're going to find out a whole bunch of information about your wines, but also about the 40th anniversary vine planting. I know that's on your website, and that's this Friday mm-hmm. from 8 to noon, a chance to plant some.
That's awesome. It will be a great time and to talk about grape growing and the legacy of it and from the past to the future. You know?
Yeah, and just they say wear garden clothes and bring your camera.
Absolutely.
always a pleasure, Philippe. Thank you so much. Yeah. Appreciate it very much. Philippe Cocard, winemaker at the award-winning Wallersheim Winery, named Winery of the Year at the 2012 San Diego International Wine Competition. 6 platinum medals. A real achievement. And it's great to have him with us today. And he'll be back and we'll talk with him again about growing grapes and also certainly about winemaking, because he obviously knows a whole lot about it. Coming up is a guy who knows a whole lot about birds, Derek Lovitch, and he has a new book out called How to Be a Better Birder. We'll talk with him next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.